Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 9/20/18. Job claims, I should say jobless claims, are at their near all-time low, a 49-year low, if you can believe it, which means it's probably why there's less of you listening to the show. You're too busy doing your jobs. Nah, not really. Our show is still as popular as ever, with more people coming on as always. Hey, and be a part of it. Just send us an email, kl@kerrylutz.com, with whatever is on your mind. If it's good enough, we'll read it on the air or perhaps even have you on the show to discuss it. So jobless claims, 49-year low. Sam McElroy is with us right now again. And Sam, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So jobless claims, 49-year low. You look at minority unemployment, near all-time low. Female unemployment, near all-time low. I think if you were a practicing Hare Krishner, you probably got all-time low unemployment. And God only knows what else. Probably if you got one of those dirty jobs that you see on TV, probably there's a hiring spree going on that can't find enough of you, right?
Yeah, that's probably right. I think there's no denying the fact that in terms of, there's a lot of different barometers that somebody can use to measure the health of an economy. And looking at jobless claims or looking at the unemployment numbers is just one of them. But I think really over the last years, you could say, we've seen improvement in terms of the number of people that are actively employed. And that's been good for the economy. I think that there's really no argument as far as whether or not people are getting back to work and they're able to find jobs. And I think that that's been good. It's really been supportive as far as helping the market to continue to increase and helping the economy to be strong also.
So, just
to kind of dovetail off that also, one of the things that kind of just popped into my mind is that I do think sometimes though, and I like to temper kind of both sides of the argument. One of the things that I have noticed, and I don't have any data to kind of look at, what the offset is or how this is working, but a large part of our practice is in working with people who are retired or transitioning into retirement. And I am seeing a lot of clients retiring early. And I feel like, some of what's happening is that there are some people in the baby boomer population that are basically just exiting the workforce also. Now, how much of that accounts for, these numbers, I don't know. But I think it's just something just to factor into the conversation as well.
Yeah, I've felt that way for a long time. Originally, when the so-called Great Recession hit, then a lot of people were voluntarily unemployed or involuntarily unemployed. They wanted jobs, couldn't find them. And now I think that in the current economy, the boomers, those of you out there like me, you're 10 years older now. And of course, Sam, that many more of you are going to be retiring, or if you couldn't find work during that time and hopefully your portfolio is doing better, your home value is up, then you're really looking at just saying, all right, things are not too bad now. I think I will just call it quits and not bother re-entering the job force, which would explain a lot about the workforce participation rate, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And I don't think that there's enough baby boomers deciding to retire early that it means that, the jobless claims numbers, aren't significant and isn't worth noting. But it does mean that, some people that basically there's a convergence from two sides, I guess. So you have some people that are just exiting the workforce, but you also have other people that are being more proactive or able to find work. And I think it's the two variables kind of working together that's making the numbers look as strong as they really are.
Yeah. And by all appearances, they look pretty strong. I mean, hey, I'm here in Florida, and you know, the recovery really started in 2014, 2015, but it shows no sign of abating here, Sam, anytime soon. And you know, it's like the old cliche of making the battleship do a U-turn. You know, it just it's not going to just slow down in 6 months' time, which means it's going to be going strong for the midterms. And there's a very good possibility when election season for 2020 kicks in that it's going to keep on going there as well.
Yeah. You know, it's a very interesting period of time that we're in. And if I have to look forward and try to make a projection of where things are going, I guess to some degree this may not be true, but I feel like I'm not all that concerned about the economy.
Yeah.
What I'm more concerned with is just all the different pieces relative to the market that have to happen simultaneously. And what I mean by that is, you know, we have a stock market that did extremely well last year. And as good as the economy did, I do think that the stock market kind of outran the economy, so to speak, a little bit last year.
Right.
And it's going to be interesting to see whether or not corporations are able to increase revenue and increase profitability fast enough to step into those, what I believe are inflated prices. But at the same time, you know, coming up, what is it? I guess maybe next week, we have another Fed meeting. We've seen some interest rate increases last year, this year, but now it's going to be really interesting to see what tone they set in terms of the overall direction for what they're planning to do for monetary policy. You know, we had the 10-year Treasury that kind of peaked back above 3% briefly earlier this year. And when that happened, we saw a couple ripples kind of shoot through the stock market. So I feel like it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the market, with growth in the economy, with you know, the Fed, with interest rates, and how all these pieces converge together in a way that doesn't allow one to topple the other and start a downward slope, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I can see that that there's a lot of potential obstacles, but somehow we've avoided them. They've been around, you know, in a way. I think we've talked about this before, is that really we didn't have a recovery until the Trump presidency started, right? Isn't that true? At least in Main Street?
Yeah, it's hard to say. In my opinion, I think it started before the Trump presidency. I think that the groundwork was already laid for a lot of the economic recovery that we're seeing today to have started. Truthfully, I don't think it really matters who won the presidency. I think we would see similar results to what we're seeing today. But I think that the recovery, it depends on kind of what you're looking at. You know, if you're talking about the stock market, a lot of the indices kind of broke back even in that 2013 to 2015 span, and then have been kind of continuing to roll from there.
So what do you think the whole tariff trade war battle, what kind of toll is it taking on the economy now, if any? And what's going to be the outcome here, Sam?
It's hard to tell. You know, it seems like when the tariff talks first started, it had a much more pronounced impact on the stock market. Just talking about stuff kind of started to make the stock market wobble a little bit. Now it seems like, in a sense, the market's becoming somewhat immune to the talks and even to some of the tariffs, and has not necessarily been as reactive to different things that happened. But the question is, you know, where is all this going? You know, we have tariffs, we impose tariffs. You know, let's say China puts tariffs on us, and it goes back and forth. There's two pieces that we have to look at. You know, one is what happens practically for the average business, and then the second is what happens sovereignly for a country. I do know, just from you know, word of mouth and just talking to people, that I'm seeing some impact start to creep in just from a business standpoint, from a business owner standpoint. The way that they bid on projects, the cost of materials, other stuff like that, is changing the way that they do pricing, and it's impacting their business. the question is, you know, I guess one of two things is really going to happen. At some point, something's going to have to give, and we should see a permanent, you know, redistribution, I guess, in terms of imports and exports and the profitability of those relative to what the United States is receiving. Or I guess at some point, you know, the tariffs are going to start to be unraveled, and basically there'd be little to no impact on the overall country.
Hey, well, interesting thing, we haven't talked about this either, is the outcome with Mexico and Canada. Mexico, basically, their incoming populist president jumped on the Trump bandwagon, didn't he?
Yeah, to some degree. You know, I always say it's just, it would be interesting to be able to hear some of the conversations that we're now privy to. I think anytime you see people come out and say things or do things that's contrary to what you would expect them to say or do, I always wonder, you know, where the pressure was applied and what happened or why the change of mind, which we just may not know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it certainly appears there's a reconfiguring of trade between the U.S. and Mexico. And whether Trudeau likes it or not, there's going to be a rebalancing of trade with Canada as well. We've seen Trump come to terms with the EU, Korea, I think Japan as well, or it's in the process, it's in the works. Many, many countries. And really, China's going to kind of be left on the outside looking in. A lot of their, their new Silk Road, modern Belt Road thing is falling through because the countries don't want to invest the capital into it, and they aren't comfortable being reliant upon China. So who's going to blink in the end?
Yeah, I think that is the question. I think that's the question and kind of what remains to be seen. And we don't know how close we are to the end of this. You know, the way that this has kind of been spanning out throughout the course of this year, there may be some other things, some other twists and turns and things that happen throughout the course of the rest of this year and then the next year. But we all basically do need to keep a finger on the pulse and just keep watching what's happening relative to all of this stuff, because depending on who does blink,
yes,
we'll basically set a different trajectory in terms of, you know, what that might mean for the market and for, you know, countries as a whole.
Yeah. And hey, the other thing is, you have to look around the world. Of all the world's economies, the U.S. is the only major one that's really thriving now, isn't it?
Yeah, there's been a lot that has happened, you know, call it over the last decade or so. And I was talking to somebody about this recently also, but, you know, Japan, one of many, places that's had a lot of issues, but I'm thinking about them and I think Italy and a couple other places where we saw, you know, them go to such great measures that they actually started using negative interest rate policies and basically, you know, charging banks to sit on money, trying to get them to release it to spur the economic growth. We've seen us do it to smaller extents in the sense that we had reduced interest rates to historic lows to try to get people to spend money and being able to use money, borrow money to do that. You know, we had issues with Greece. We had issues kind of a lot of different places. And I think it is fair to say that if you're looking around globally, and I think this is one of the reasons that the U.S. stock market has done really well, is that it has seemed more stable. It seemed a little bit more confident. And if you're looking at places to put money, it seemed, a little bit, I think, more secure investing in the U.S. stock markets than basically investing in other markets around the globe.
Yeah. So interesting, though, that, you know, the U.S. market continues to go up. The economy is putting in some really solid numbers. Question of how much longer that will continue. Can it continue? Is it unsustainable? We're taking on, a lot of debt. And if we were an early 1900s transatlantic passenger ship, we might be looking out for icebergs a little too late.
Yeah, that's definitely true. You know, one other thing for people to kind of keep an eye on is, we know that when we look at the Q2 numbers, GDP did hit over 4%. I believe it hit 4.1%. You know, kind of looking at where the Q3, Q4 numbers come in terms of GDP growth, is really going to give us some indication as far as what to expect, I think, into the future. Because if a GDP rate of 4% or greater ultimately does become sustainable, in a sense, you know, cash fixes a lot of stuff. You know, but if it ends up being unsustainable, then that starts to pull into question the efficacy of the tax plan and other things like that, which we may have to reevaluate.
Yeah, well, the tax plan, that's the one thing we haven't talked about. So what is happening with the tax plan? Is everything going peachy? I mean, is it really working? It's wonders that it has every time it's been tried.
You know, like so many things, you almost have to wait until time tells what the real story is, because I don't think anything starts out really, really good or really, really bad. It starts out more neutral, and then you have to wait and see what develops. Some of the things on the positive side is that corporations, many of them have had more cash. We've seen them be able to do things to make themselves more fiscally solvent in the form of buying back stocks, in the form of shedding debt, you know, other stuff like that. We've also seen a lot of that cash influx, I think, help to make companies more profitable, which in a sense fixes part of what we were talking about earlier in the show in the terms of the growth of their share values increasing faster than maybe they can increase their profitability or increase their earnings. So all of those things have been good. And I think that shot in the arm is partially what spurred that 4.1% GDP number in Q2. One of the things that recently came out, though, and I forget which office it is that does this, but basically the office in the government that tracks, you know, the deficit and the budget and stuff like that, did say that the rate at which the federal deficit is increasing is basically faster than what they initially projected when the plan was first coming through. So the question is, which one is going to basically outweigh the other one? Will the effect of the tax plan be enough to spur the economy and spur growth to where increase in revenues are basically going to outweigh the growth in the deficit, or is the impact from the tax relief going to be short-lived while we have a permanent problem due to the increase in the deficit? And that's what we're kind of waiting to find out.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of the benefits of the tax plan seem to be that they're going to take a little bit of time to realize, but others not so much. Like repatriation of foreign profits from foreign subsidiaries, that's definitely taking place. But the long-term investment aspects of it certainly going to take time before we know for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
So that's a kind of stay tuned type situation. Stay tuned for the next installment, but don't expect to get it from the mainstream press either, because they're just not dealing with a full deck. They're not honest, and they're not really concerned about giving you the honest truth. And that's the problem. There's so many sources of information, and it's impure, and it's really just unhelpful to the average investor. But Sam, you are always helpful to the average investor. Where do we find you? Where's the best place to connect with you?
The easiest place is just on our website. It's www.atfinancial.com. And you know, all the information on us can be found there.
All right, atfinancial.com. And you can always look at the show notes for any interview. Click the link and it'll take you to that person's website, which you could do with Sam's. Hey, don't forget, be a part of the show. We love hearing from you. KL@KerryLutz.com. Twitter feed @KerryLutz. Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Sam, we will talk to you again real soon.
Okay, sounds good.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.